All right. Our next speaker is Chuck Rice, our president for this year. We appreciate Chuck taking time in a year when he probably doesn't have a lot of spare time.
Thanks, Scott. Actually, when you and Ray invited me, and since Ray funded this project, I felt like I was compelled to respond. So, anyway, this is part of our work is related to AFRI grant that we had on nitrous oxide emissions. So, again, the co-authors are listed here. Two of my students are in the back, and they can answer all the questions. So, all right, this is a little different mouse than the one before. Okay. Okay, so why are we interested in nitrous oxide? And I'm at least one of the interests is related to nitrous oxide as being contributing to greenhouse gases and climate change. And if we look at the global potential, nitrous oxide contributes about 8% of the total global warming potential on a CO2 equivalent basis. However, of the 8%, 85% of the N2O is associated with agriculture, either agriculture soils, where's my mouse? There it is. From ag soils and animal agriculture, cattle and feedlots. 50% of that is from agriculture, generally associated with nitrogen enrichment of soils, okay? Not just fertilizer, but any legume nitrogen, biological fixed nitrogen, nitrogen enrichment will contribute to that result. Okay, so I'm going to give a couple of specific examples and then talk about a bigger picture on technology and policy, a little bit on policy, so at least my thoughts. So this is, again, work from that Miguel produced in this project. And the point here is on nitrous oxide, we have 2 years, 2009 and 2010, looking at different tillage and nitrogen sources, composted manure, and fertilizer. The couple points here, one is, if you should know, and you probably know, is that nitrous oxide emissions is highly dynamic. Okay, these are two different years, that you get two different pulses here, and the year-to-year response is completely different. And I'll show you the annual summary over here. So it's going to be hard to monitor, hard to predict some of those responses. And it's, as the previous speaker mentioned, it's highly dynamic, spatially it's highly heterogeneous. And you can see the coefficients of the standard error bars here. If you look at the annual summary, the cumulative emissions, there's a couple points here. This is no-till. This is continuous corn. And tilled is conservation tillage, chiseled disc, again, for those 2 years. In 2009, no-till had significantly less emissions than the tilled portion of the experiment. In the no-till, there was not much difference between the manure and the fertilizer, where the fertilized was urea in this year, was much higher in the tilled system. In 2010, which happened to be a much wetter year, there was no difference in the no-till and the tilled for the fertilizer, and there was no difference with the compost and manure between the tillage, but there was a difference between end source. I guess a little bit side point here is a lot of people think that no-till is always going to increase N2O emissions, and that's not been the case in experiments that we've seen. It's the same or in some years less. And if you look at the literature, you find that no-till increases N2O. No-till, there's no difference, and no-till reduces N2O. So take your pick, you got it right. So, okay, but in our case, it's either the same or less. So, again, that's a tillage effect. So then the other question, as far as different strategies, how can you manage nitrogen fertilizer to reduce those emissions. And we have two different systems here where we surface broadcasted and subsurface banded, right, Miguel? And you see the in 2009, there's a slight reduction in no-till with different nitrogen placement, but it wasn't significant. However, in 2010, the biggest effect was slow-release nitrogen fertilizer, a sulfur-coated urea product. We have reduced emissions in both tillage systems and much greater reductions in that tillage. So that high reduction in or high production in tillage systems, we could reduce by looking at essentially delayed release. And you can see there's some variation, again, in response between the no-till and the tilled in those N2O emissions. So nitrogen management, that tillage is only one component. You have to think about the system. And so it's a combination of cropping, it's a combination of fertilizer management technology that we need to incorporate in those different tillage systems or other management systems in order to look at reductions in emissions. So Phil Robertson a couple years ago looked at different technology potentials for reducing emissions. And basically it goes hand in hand with trying to increase nitrogen use efficiency, increase fertilizer use, as well as other implications such as leaching and that. So soil nitrogen tests, he suggested that get a 10% reduction in N2O. Fertilizer timing, basically slow release or delayed application, a 10% reduction in emissions. Using cover crops as a capture of excess nitrate in the system, recycling that, 5% placement, 5%, and again, those inhibitors that would cause a delay in the nitrogen release is 5%. One of the biggest effects was through crop end use efficiency, trying to increase crop efficiency, because then that controls the excess amount of nitrogen that's needed or it's better used, and so more of it gets into the crop and less to the environment. So 20% reduction there. So those are some of the mitigation technologies, and a lot of those are available now, although crop breeding in coordinating with soil scientists needs to be done to achieve some of these other goals. Okay, so that's the measurement side of things. I think, and you'll see reason why, is then we need to look at models because it is so highly variable. It's going to be site-specific, and then we don't have the right kind of technologies to measure every single field, every single year, every single day. So we're going to have to rely on models. And I'm not a modeler, but I realize the value of that. And this is just one model. It's DNDC. It's the group that we've worked with. But it doesn't, I'm not picking on, pushing a particular model. The point here is that you got to look at the model components. What's guiding those? Climate, okay, moisture, precipitation, temperature, the soil type. You saw some of the discussion earlier. Vegetation, and then soil management or human activity that relates to those. We know a lot of those in the database. We know soil type. We know climate or precipitation patterns. We can put in plugging in cropping systems. We can use those then to build examples where how to develop management strategy, and I would suggest even a monitoring strategy you'll see a little bit later. And so I don't like this mouse, sorry. The modeling is useful, and this is just comparing several different models, looking at DNDC, DASENT, and another model here, looking at observed data, the red measurements, and the model is in the blue. And if they're calibrated and validated correctly, we can do a fairly good job of capturing many of those events. Not all, and sometimes errors out of sequence. We have some stuff that Miguel's been working with that's out of sequence, but basically it captures, over the year, it captures the mitigation technologies that's available. So I really think that models are going to have to be part of that system. So if we look at a monitoring system, that was part of the title of the symposium, I think measurement, we're going to have some ground truthing, but I think we're going to have to rely on models to develop a monitoring system. And you can remote sense even vegetation when you have the databases for soils. And with that, what Cheng Shi and Bill Sellis have done is look at, figure out hot spots across Kansas, and using a combination of watershed units, the four agriculture zones across Kansas, looking at climate data that's been captured, the soils data, and deposition, and then understanding those cropping systems, we can look at, predict how management strategies might affect N2O. And so this is just one example, N2O emission rates modeled, okay, switching from conventional corn, irrigated corn, to a no-till corn across the state of Kansas, looking at all those variables. And so what you see is that the darker the red, the greater the decrease. And so there are zones in here that we could look at and say, okay, in this area here, we got the greatest decrease. Maybe we want to target that. And so several different scenarios here. This is the average N2O emissions for no-till and conventional-till with corn or soybeans, and then the percent relative reduction by switching to no-till, at least in our case. For corn, with or without irrigation, we saw on average about a 5% reduction. For soybeans, okay, we see about a 16% reduction, whether it's irrigated or not irrigated. So, again, I think the model is useful to help targeting and identifying those strategies that are useful. Okay, and so the last 5 minutes or so, right? Okay, talk a little bit about policy. And these are just my thoughts, not as president, not as anybody else's views, but there's at least three ways, and I'm sure there's people that think of many other ways. We can regulate nitrogen and regulate N2O emissions. That's going to be very difficult, I think, very costly. It's going to be hard to monitor. We can impose a nitrogen tax, kind of like people have talked about a carbon tax and a nitrogen tax proposed. Oh, I might back up on the regulation. Some people have said, well, we're just going to have every farmer cut back their fertilizer by 20%. Okay, I think that's wrong because those farmers are already doing a good job. If it's just mandatory 20% reduction, well, they're going to undercut their needs. And there are some farmers and states do a better job than others. And so a blanket approach I don't think is the right approach. You can do a nitrogen tax, and that's possible. And that will achieve, then that will allow, incentivize individual farmers to increase their efficiency. And that's a possibility. And then you can provide other incentives through conservation programs that might achieve multiple goals and try to achieve that. And I think what's key here is, contrary to the blanket approach, the tax, although it's somewhat a blanket approach, I think the incentives you could start to target, and this is from work Peter Grace and Phil Robertson did, looking at N2O emissions for the north central region. Maybe you want to target areas that are hot spots and incentivize those instead of doing a blanket approach. And so it's harder to implement, but I think honestly it's probably the better way environmentally and agriculture sustainability way to go is target that. So no magical solutions, but just a couple of comments on the policy end. So in summary, N2O emissions are highly dynamic. They vary both in space and time. It's going to be very difficult to measure. I think monitoring, it's going to have to be done by modeling and develop scenarios. But we can document those variables. We can document precipitation. We can probably even monitor fertilizer if we wanted to. A little bit more difficult, but we can document the cropping systems, the tillage systems. And then as far as reductions, the technology is available. But I think policy options are going to be limited, and I think through incentives or targeting areas is probably the best approach. And so with that, thank you.